This series of Kicking It Off is sponsored by Bazooka Goals, Airpitch, and 3v3 UK. Having been a coach for over three decades, I know how important it is to have equipment that's easy to use and immediately engages the players. Bazooka Goals is the award-winning pop-up goal that's the perfect partner for small-sided games and training. Remember, every dream starts with a goal. And if you want to take your games to the next level, Airpitch's unique system keeps the ball in play 95% of the time. And coaches, if you're like me and want to bring the best of football, futsal and street football together, then 3v3 UK hosts tournaments and festivals around the country, as well as having a great franchise program. It's all about fast feed fun. All three of these brands will help you create a fun-filled, vibrant environment in which to produce the happy, active, skillful players of the future.
Hello, and welcome to the last episode of Kicking It Off.
No.
We hear you say more. Thank you so much for joining us for this whole podcast series. Today, we're going to be continuing the conversation from last week's episode where if Carlsberg did a foundation phase program, what might it look like? And obviously, there are other lagers available, must say that. In last week's episode, we talked about child development and how to have and how to create a child-friendly pedagogy and then empowering children and how those three points can influence not just our individual sessions, but then the overall program that you will have created or may want to create during the course of a season. So today, we're going to be discussing another three points, number one being the power of play, how to develop foundation phase specialists, and then the importance of providing both competitive and recreational opportunities. So, Dad, in last week's episode, it was a really interesting conversation about how coaches can consider having a through line of all of their sessions. And we started to touch on play at the end of last week's episode. So let's just get straight in there. The power of play and how can a coach take that and really run with it in their sessions?
Yeah, I think any coach who's working with young children, if you don't understand or at least try to come to terms with how powerful a force it is in the development of our young children, then you're missing an absolute secret weapon that you can use when you're interacting with children. In its purest sense, play is self-determined. That means the children decide when to do it and what it looks like. And you need to hold that thought in your head. There's no real endpoint. Mm-hmm. So when we do football, it's, there's a halftime after 15 minutes, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
For children, when they are in a free flow state of play, there is no endpoint. And the direction might go off in different ways, depending on something that might engage them, something that might fascinate them, or they become curious about. And so they go down a different track. So if we know that that's what play in its purest sense looks like, is there a way that we can try to create those kind of opportunities and situations in our coaching sessions? We won't if it's highly organized, highly structured, coach dominated. And it doesn't mean that planning and preparation isn't important. This is not about just turning up.
Yeah.
Having a really detailed plan is brilliant for you. But the secret is the kids don't need to know that all of those details. And hopefully in your planning, you've set things up in such an engaging way that the children have a problem to solve. They know that you're there if they need you. And through trial and error, exploration, and a bit of experimenting, they're going to try to solve those problems themselves.
Yeah.
That is much nearer free play than an organized coaching session in its traditional sense.
Yeah. And again, it's about planning enough that this free play can exist.
Yeah.
It's about being structured enough that it's not rigid, it's actually just free.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that that's a really difficult
yeah,
thing to balance at times. I think I would find that quite difficult, knowing how much is too much or is this not enough,
yeah.
that to have these really great parameters for the kids learning whilst also not being so strict with those parameters that it's inhibiting learning.
Yeah. So the easiest thing, and we are seeing more and more coaches do this, we used to, as coaches, and I am absolutely guilty myself, we held the game back till the last 10 minutes of the hour session, and the kids could only play that if they behaved all the way through
almost
the boring
as a reward,
stuff. That,
yeah.
So we're now seeing more and more coaches starting with a game, but having a game that just provides enough challenges that if they stuck with that same activity or game for the whole hour, the children would stay engaged because what they needed to learn to be successful was constantly changing. I think that's what the modern coach needs to grasp, needs to practice, and needs to begin to replicate when they're working, certainly with young children. But across the ages, it's the same approach.
Because you would like to think that the children that are coming to these coaching sessions are coming because they want to play football. So why should that be held off right until the end and actually roll with their momentum, roll with what they want?
Yeah.
And you mentioned in a previous episode that with smaller formats, inevitably with young children, the ball might go out of play. The first thing they want to do is run and chase that ball. They all want to have as much time on the ball as possible.
Yeah.
So knowing what they want and their excitement to do these things, then that's great. Capitalize on that.
Yeah. And I think coaches who adopt this kind of approach, once they get over the threat or the nervous, the nervousness, I think you'll find higher levels of engagement, higher levels of motivation. And our role then is to observe more critically, so that if we do feel the need to help a particular player, we've based it on some really close observations. And then the help that we can give them, we've had time to think, because we're not barking instructions out to the players all the time. You might see something and think, do you know what, I could help that player there. So you actually spend some time then thinking about what's the best way to do it. Mm-hmm. Do I just have a quiet word? Is it something I need to stop the whole group for? Or when he goes for a drink, I'll just drop this out. I've even written it down on a piece of paper and just given them the piece of paper to read. And it's for the next 5 minutes, try to be more difficult to beat. So the notion was every time he went to close somebody down or try to tackle somebody, mm-hmm. he was just getting beaten.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't even an event.
Yeah.
So it's time limited. It's not for the rest of your coaching career or for the rest of your life. It was just try to be a bit more difficult to be beat.
Yeah.
And it was a thumbs up from him, a thumbs up from me. Nobody else knew.
Yeah.
So it became a bit of a thing. Somebody saw it and says, Pete, can I have a note? And so you can create a nightmare.
Yeah.
But it's trying to say, I've seen something. What's the best way to help the player with what I've seen in an attempt to improve that particular area? And we talked about creativity for the players. We have to think about those creative ways to keep engagement high.
And so I know that I know that play can be broken down depending on whether you're working with in the play phase, whether you're working in the DNA, but there are different corners that we talk about. So in play phase, it's play is broken down again into four. You've got imaginative play, social play, physical play, and object play. So if a coach, obviously you're wanting for your overall, your season to be quite balanced in learning and that every corner is given. And play isn't the only thing that you know should be included, but it's a real important one. So are there any activities that you've got in your back pocket that are focused on play that you think are a great one that a coach could just listen to this and take and roll with it straight away?
Yeah. I mean, we mentioned in the Play Phase podcast episode that there are 20 activity cards with these kind of playful activities already.
Ready to go.
Yeah. And what we've done is we've given ownership to the player within the session plan. So if you're wondering all of this stuff that we're talking about giving a voice and choice and a bit more autonomy, what that looks like on a lesson plan, if you look at these activity cards, it's actually got, this is what the children do. This is the question you might ask them and then deal with those responses. So we've tried to help you as much as possible. If you've mentioned four types of play in the play phase. If I was doing physical play, I know that a surefire winner is either British Bulldog or Tag and Chase games. Mm-hmm. Now, very little explanation for the children because they play these games every day.
In school, yeah.
So I think you're going to get engagement straight away. The important thing for the coach is to say, you know, when somebody's chasing you, what are you looking for? And hopefully they're going to say, well, I need to know where the tagger is. I need to know the point where I want to get to. And I need to know where other people are so that I don't bump into them. For me, that's a game of football. I need to know where the goal is. I need to know where my opponents are and my teammates. I also need to look for spaces and gaps to run into, either to take the ball myself or to be there to support my teammates. So going back to teaching and learning and this thread that runs through and how you connect each bit together, we can play tag and chase. And the talk is all about how does this relate to football? And what do they call it when you look around? You know, your scanning or your awareness. Yeah. And so when you suddenly stop and dodge and go the other way, that's deception. So I wonder if we could do that with a ball. So when we play this next game, it's 4v4 or it's 3v3. The only thing we're practicing is, can you trick your opponent? So this is where you begin to connect the learning together.
And taking what children are already offering you and then just,
absolutely,
again, reframing it rather than going, right, okay, these children can't do this. They're maybe not capable of doing this, but I'm going to try and get them to do it anyway. Work with what you've got because they're going to be growing and learning and becoming new people across the course of the season. From week to week, you'll meet them and they'll be different.
Yeah.
And they will have grown with everything they've been exposed to just in their life outside of the coaching session. So work with what they are capable of doing and reframing that, the learning that's already happening, into the learning that you want to just keep growing.
Yeah. And I use tag and chase all the time, because it's a great way for finding out what the children are looking at and what they're paying attention to. And you'll have kids who are being chased, who are under extreme pressure. That narrows off your vision straight away. Yeah. So they're probably just looking for a space to escape into, somebody to hide behind, or are they close enough to the end point to get over there and be safe?
Yeah.
For others, if that chase is going on between two people, somebody else is just dawdling through. They're not really having to tend to very much.
Yeah.
But there's going to be times in the game of football where it's you that's under pressure or it's you that's not under pressure. Have a little bit more thinking time. So what do you do in that situation? What do you do in that situation? Mm-hmm. I just think it's the perfect way to get children to think a little bit more deeply about football. And if we are talking about play, plays where children make sense of the world, they construct their understanding of the world and deepen that knowledge and understanding. Well, the world that we want them to exist and be successful in is football. So tag and chase is a great way of them constructing their knowledge of, crikey, there's people moving everywhere, the space is opening and closing, there's somebody really close, you know, he's fast, they're not. All of those things are happening. It's a great way to help us support the children develop that and construct that knowledge of the world of football.
And that tag game specifically is a group game. Everybody's involved. And obviously, if we're thinking about creating a program that everybody's on board with, then these activities that are group-based, they're getting to know one another, what one another is capable of. And when we frame that and flip that and put that in the world of football, oh, okay, in this game of tag and chase, I've noticed that this person is really fast or can get out of a sticky situation where there's lots of pressure, they can get out of that really fast. Maybe that's a good person to pass to. And actually, they're doing that thinking for you, rather than, as a coach, you trying to enforce or trying to hurry up thoughts and thinking processes that are just not quite there yet. They're going to be doing it themselves.
It's much better than standing on the touchline till you're blue in the face shouting, pass it, pass it, pass it. Just begin to sow some seeds where children can see what the possibilities might be, but they'll also have their own ideas to contribute. And I think that's a really nice place to be.
So then, Dad, if we move on to point number two, how to develop foundation phase specialists. Now, that sounds like it's a big old job, and I'm sure that we could have a whole episode on that. So where do we begin with that?
Yeah, it can be quite daunting. But, you know, everything we've spoken about over the last 9 episodes, and certainly in this last 10th episode, even if you take on board 1 or 2 little ideas, you will be on the way and on the path to becoming a specialist. I've dedicated virtually, 3-4 decades trying to be the best coach of children that I can be. I don't expect that level of commitment from anybody, but I would accept more than minimum operating standards for anybody who's working with their young children, purely because of the importance of that role. And you can only recognise the importance of that role if you see them first as children, not as young footballers. If all you're thinking about is winning the league or, hammering somebody on Sunday and laughing about it because, you won 10-0, that's not becoming a specialist. A specialist, certainly in the foundation phase, aims to maximise and squeeze out as much of the development of the children as possible. It will be great for football. It'll be great for them.
I feel like this is something that societally is a bit of a problem anyway. And don't worry, I won't get too political. But people who work with our younger ages and our early years, the importance of their role isn't valued in the way that it should be. I was listening to a really interesting part on the radio where it was the author Michael Morpurgo. He's an amazing child's author, and still to this day, some of his books are my favourite books. And he was being interviewed by the poet Roger McGough, and they were both having a conversation, really quite frustrated that primary school teachers and then working up to high school teachers are paid significantly less than those working in higher education. And obviously we're in a different sector of work here, but that it all relates. It's a really big and at times can be a really frustrating journey, I'm sure. So nobody is expecting you to invest so much time and not get anything in return, but that we do understand the work that you're doing and we're really appreciative of it.
Oh, absolutely. And the whole reasoning behind the website, the podcasts, all the content that we're generating and sharing with you, it's because we understand how difficult it is. We don't want you to think that you're a lone voice in the wilderness. We want to be the first place that you think about when you are looking for ideas, you want some advice, you want some extra information if you're really committed to developing into that specialist. We want you to think, do you know what, I need to go to the Session Collective, because they are right behind the world that I live in. And they're right behind me trying to be the best that I can be for the children.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully the community that we create along the way, as the website grows, as our social media presence and everything grows, that you all feel that you are supported and that we're very, very grateful for all the work that you're doing with our youngest players. And that is part of it, being supported and having a community, because I think it's an unrealistic expectation to be able to absorb everything yourself and to be an individual that has all of the answers, because that's unrealistic. We don't expect our kids to have all of the answers, so why should that be an expectation on adults? And that's another thing that can help people grow in their journey to become a specialist, I suppose.
Yeah, and it was part of our motivation, to put in this whole thing together. So if the engagement's high, then we can create that community of practice. If we can get that kind of cross-pollination or cross-fertilization, we're going to get coaches saying, I tried this and I tried that. Then suddenly, we've got a group of coaches that know that they're not on their own and there is a whole host of people helping and supporting them to get better.
Absolutely. And so, Dad, is there any other bits of advice that you would like to offer with regards to becoming a specialist or how else we might do that as people?
I think, and I'm not advertising this, but I know when I wanted more information, I looked into an organisation called Thrive, and they are specialists, particularly around social and emotional development and for young children, self-regulation, which from the research is emerging as a really critical thing for young children. And self-regulation really means that they can control their response when things don't go quite as well as it might have done. But it's understanding that the behaviours that the child might display doesn't make the child a bad child.
Ooh.
I think Dora agrees with that.
I think she very strongly agrees with that.
And I think it was Chris Pascal who said to me about children who need the most help ask for it in the most unhelpful way.
Mm.
And it completely changed the way that, you know, I approached bad behaviour or the notion of poor behaviour. So Thrive would be one to certainly look into. And as I said, I'm not promoting their products, but I have looked closely at what they offer and it really does fit with what we're trying to build here.
And so lastly then, Dad, if we're to talk about the final point, which was the importance of providing both competitive and recreational opportunities, what does that mean and how might that look like in a session?
Yeah.
And then in the overall program?
At the moment, from a very, very young age, the pathway for children looks very much like the adults. You train in the week, you play a game at the weekends. And because of that, this very traditional, deeply ingrained approach, match day has almost become this monster where you've got parents behaving badly, you've got referees being abused, you've got players arguing, you know. And I think certainly for the younger age groups and foundation phase children, we need to make match day look different.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that competition is important. So we don't want to do away with competition, but we can reframe it and we can reframe what we learn from being competitive. And that extends to knowing how to win, lose or draw with dignity, respect, sportsmanship. I don't see those values every time I go and watch a grassroots game on a Sunday morning. What I see is people getting angry, shouting at people, demanding this, demanding that. I've seen young referees, their children themselves being abused. That's not going to develop a generation that loves football in the way that we do for the rest of their lives. It's going to make too many people walk away from the game. So for me, match days for our foundation phase children should be a celebration of them choosing football, wanting to play. And with that in mind, everybody who is in my team needs to be playing. We already plan for 3 or 4 children not to play every weekend. So that leads to you pick your best players, you pick your fastest players, you pick those children who are already ahead of the curve. So the children who probably need the help the most, they're stood on the sidelines wondering how long or how many minutes I'm going to get today. That's not right. So we have to have a really close interrogation of what competition looks like for our youngest children. And the recreational activities, because society and our culture is changing and children are on electronic devices a lot more, they're losing those informal opportunities in the street, down at the park, on the field. You know, a certain generation, certainly my generation, that was the norm.
Yeah.
And so if we know that those opportunities are being reduced, I think we are duty bound to say, well, our training sessions need to look more like informal play. Yeah. And that will reflect all the talk about the pedagogy, the environment, about informal play. we are wrapping that up, but it's in our coaching sessions. I think if we look closely at those two things, what training looked like and then what match day could look like,
yeah,
multiple games, teams being mixed together, players on the same team playing with different players, I think that would certainly give us a much better introduction to both competition and informal play in the foundation phase.
And I think that ties into really embracing smaller formats.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Actually, if match day is not where some get to play and some don't, how about everybody gets to play, but we actually break the teams down?
Yeah.
And everybody, and there's lots of rotation, and maybe you play a couple of years above you or a couple of years below you, and there's lots of different exposure to people at different levels, because all of that is just going to be a really brilliant environment to help growth,
yeah,
in general, I would imagine.
Yeah, and I think it has to be said, I mean, a lot of my work was with the boys' academies, with the professional clubs, and the programs and the value added that those boys' academies in the main add now to the development of our young children is off the scale. They are absolutely prepared to have player-led tournaments, fixtures where teams know that at any given point we're going to have the same number of players, they're going to have more players than us, and then we're going to have more players than them. That is becoming the norm. Not every week, but there are these opportunities interspersed right throughout the season. There's futsal. There are 3v3 tournaments. There are 6v6, 4v4 tournaments, as well as the larger number tournaments, which we know they're not the enemy. They are important. But I think the volume and variety that is now present within the boys' academy system, if we could get grassroots just a little bit closer and a bit more open-minded to that kind of approach, I tell you what, we would be really dangerous.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth there about the volume and variation. And the more exposure that young children have to different things, the better. Well, Dad, again, we've covered so much ground, haven't we? I feel really sad that it's the last. It's our last episode.
It's the last for this series.
It's the last for this series. Just on a personal note, I would just like to say how much I have enjoyed doing these episodes. Not just because we've been talking about some really interesting and really important stuff, but I've just got to spend so much time and quality time with you, Dad. So thank you so much for having me and for having Dora, wherever she may be in the garden now. Any last words, Dad?
Yeah, I think your patience with me, your expertise and the way that you are producing and editing these podcasts gives us the ammunition to say to the grassroots game, we could evolve, we could be better, we could become those specialists that the children really deserve and really what we should be committed to becoming. So I hope you've enjoyed them. It has been a great time doing them. We hope there's enough variety and that it will, at the end of the day, begin to influence how you approach coaching young children.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. This has been Kicking It Off from me and from Dad. Thank you so much, and we shall see you later.
Good job.
Thanks again to our sponsors, Bazooka Goals, Air Pitch, and 3v3 UK, for helping us to create the perfect environment to develop happy, active, and skillful players.